This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The musical Into the Woods begins, like many classic fairy tales, with the line, "Once upon a time." But it quickly becomes clear that this may not be a happily ever after story. Stephen Sondheim's fractured fairy tale has familiar characters like Cinderella, Little Red Riding Hood, and Rapunzel, but it explores the darker side of these stories and what can really happen when our wishes come true. The show is on stage at UNC Chapel Hill's Playmakers in rotating repertory with A Midsummer Night's Dream through Sunday, December 7th. We get a special preview in our studio today, and joining me first is Joe Hodge. He is the producing artistic director at Playmakers and the director of Into the Woods. Welcome back, Joe.
Thanks, Frank. Great to be here.
Also with us is the show's dramaturg, Greg Cable. Hello, Greg.
Hi.
Joe, can you give us the premise of Into the Woods? Set it up for us.
Oh, what's the premise? Probably need Greg to tell you what the premise is. Into the Woods, it takes several of Grimm's well-known fairy tales, Jack of Jack and the Beanstalk fame, Little Red Riding Hood, Cinderella. There's a witch, of course, because that's the way these stories go. And there's an invention of Sondheim and Lepine's, which is the baker and the baker's wife, who want very badly to have a child. And so the witch insists that they collect various things to make a potion. And if they collect these things successfully, then she will grant them a child. And that includes Little Red Riding Hood's cape. And it includes Jack's white cow, and it includes Rapunzel's yellow hair, and something else.
Cinderella's slipper.
And Cinderella, and of course Cinderella's slipper.
Pure as gold.
And of course Cinderella's slipper. And merges all of these together in a really fun and exciting way.
And it all wraps up after Act 1. Everybody lives happily ever after.
Yeah.
And then there's Act 2.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I guess if you're not Stephen Sondheim and James Lepine, we were talking about this on our drive over. If you're not Sondheim and Lepine, this play does not survive modern dramaturgy. It just doesn't. Because everything that is set up in the opening scene is solved by intermission. And then you come back for a second act where an entirely new set of questions is opened.
Well, Greg, let's stop it there because, Greg, as the dramaturg, you're the one who's kind of responsible for doing the research on this. And the fact is that those fairy tales, if we open them up and examine them, do invite us to Act Two, what happens after Happily Ever After. And it seems that Sondheim and Lepine did their homework on these fairy tales and their impact. Tell us more about that and how those fairy tales play their role, particularly in Act Two.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the maybe key lines in the lyrics is dreams come true, not free. And for sure, the difference between sort of the happily ever after narrative of Act One and sort of opening up the action of the second act to exploring how now these characters that were on these individual pursuits going to successfully live and work together to create a community, you know, widens the themes of the play. And one thing we discovered in initially researching fairy tales is how much they gravitated a lot more towards myth than fables, right? So there isn't any easy morality in the play, just like there aren't in fairy tales themselves, as much as we're used to more, maybe more sanitized versions of some of those stories.
Yeah, go back and read Grimm's. Back and read Grimm's if you think they end happily ever after.
They're terrifying.
So that's kind of there is a kind of be careful what you wish for aspect to this, but it's even more than that, isn't it? I mean, it really examines the wish itself and where that thing comes from, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is one thing that Joe was talking about that really interested him in the show is the relationship between storytelling and reality. Carl Jung once said that the work in progress becomes the poet's fate. And there's something about, you know, that we don't just read and digest these stories, but in some ways they overtake us and control us at the same time that we tried to get into the texture of the production in terms of design.
Yeah, the story can become the kind of bedrock or foundation of a wish. It's sort of percolating under the surface. But, you know, where does the story come from? Have we adapted it from our culture and absorbed it? Or, you know, to what extent is it really a desire of our own?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And, you know, if you read Bettelheim and Jung and Campbell as Sondheim and Lepine clearly did, and as we did in researching this thing, you know, there's so much talk of these, you know, many of these fairy tales spring up pan-culturally and independent of one another, which leads many to think that it's a very human need, that we need these stories, and that's why they show up. But we found a piece of research that I was thrilled by, and we ended up designing the production rather around, which was by a guy called Terry
Pratchett,
who posited that while it's said that people need these stories, perhaps that's not true at all. It's the stories who need people. Hmm. And they are, you can think of them virally or parasitically, that they show up wherever is necessary in order to get themselves told, which became a really fun jumping off point for us in terms of conceiving the physical production, the scenic world that it's in. It's placed in a kind of library. At the beginning of the play, a book leaps off the shelf and insists on being told. The narrator picks it up and opens, and once upon a time, and off we go. Because I think a lot of what the play is exploring is this idea of narrative. And the witch has a lyric late in the play, which I think is crucially important, and for as far as I'm concerned, is what the play is about, where the witch says in the lyric, "Careful the tales you tell, that is the spell. Children will listen." You know, the stories we hand down, how do we interrupt that? How do we make a change in narrative? How do we change the story? Sins of the fathers, sins of the sons, things that are passed down that are not healthy. These are all over the play, and trying to break those patterns and break those narratives is much of the play, particularly the second act.
Well, let's get a flavor and a sense of this show right now. We're joined by one of the actors in the production, Jessica Sorgi, and she plays Little Red Riding Hood. Jessica, first, welcome. Good to have you here.
Hi.
Would you set up this, you're going to sing a song for us now. Maybe you can put it in context for us.
Yeah, so at this point in the play, Little Red has just been devoured by the wolf, and the baker comes and rescues her. And she is now faced with this dilemma of, I had my cape, I followed my mother's instructions, but something bad still happened to me. How do I process what just occurred? And this is her processing that moment. Mother said straight ahead, not to delay or be misled. I should have heeded her advice, but he seemed so nice. And he showed me things, many beautiful things, that I hadn't thought to explore. They were off my path, so I never had dared. I had been so careful, I never had cared. And he made me feel excited, well, excited and scared. When he said, come in, with that sickening grin, how could I know what was in store? Once his teeth were bared, though I really got scared, well, excited and scared. But he drew me close, and he swallowed me down, down a dark, slimy path, where lie secrets that I never want to know. And when everything familiar seemed to disappear forever, at the end of the path was Granny once again. So we wait in the dark until someone sets us free, and we're brought into the light, and we're back at the start. And I know things now, many valuable things that I hadn't known before. Do not put your faith in a cape and a hood. They will not protect you the way that they should. And take extra care with strangers, even flowers have their dangers. And though scary is exciting, nice is different than good. Now I know, don't be scared. Granny is right, just be prepared. Isn't it nice to know a lot? And a little bit not.
Jessica Sorgi and music director Jay Wright on the keyboard performing I Know Things Now from the musical Into the Woods, now on stage at Playmakers Theater at UNC Chapel Hill. Great job, both of you. It sounded wonderful. Jessica, you know, obviously, I'm sure you heard the story of Little Red Riding Hood growing up. When did you first encounter the sort of the dark side, the in the woods, this notion that these people could have full lives and represent something that's going on with you?
Yes, of course. Well, I think when you're young, and when I was young, when these stories were told to me, I took them at face value, and I took kind of the moral lessons that you're supposed to take from them. And then it wasn't until I was introduced to the musical when I was probably around 14, which is Little Red's age, actually, that I started to realize, oh, there's a lot more to these stories, and there's a darker side to these stories that it's fun to uncover.
Well, you know, this play itself is sometimes Sondheim fans will tell you it's one of their favorites, if not their favorite. But, Greg, it comes at an interesting time in his career. I want to take a step back and talk about the development of this play, the creation of this play itself. Tell us about it.
Well, Into the Woods was developed during the decade when Sondheim had his first taste of, in some ways, not being embraced any longer. You know, there's a long string of successes in the 1970s with Sondheim shows, and suddenly in 1981, there was a musical, Merrily We Roll Along, which only had 16 performances and then closed, and Sondheim quit the theater, said he was going to write mystery novels instead. So he was gradually lured back in by James Lapine, who was the artistic director of Playwrights Horizon. So it's an off-Broadway, less commercially pressured environment. And he encouraged Sondheim to start exploring some ideas together and see if they could come up with something viable. And that led to Sunday in the Park with George, which ultimately won the Pulitzer Prize and sort of whetted Sondheim's taste again for writing for Broadway, since Sunday transferred successfully there as well. And so Lapine and Sondheim wanted to shop around basically for another idea to collaborate on, and they went through some various iterations of things that didn't ultimately pan out. But Lapine had the idea about fairy tales, and that was something that Sondheim really latched onto. And maybe what's so beautiful about the piece is how seamlessly the book and the music and lyrics work together. You can't tell where one collaborative's work stopped and the other began, but they constantly inform one another.
It's kind of interesting that that Sondheim, kind of having a mid-career crisis, we can think of another, the poet Dante, solves his mid-career crisis when he awakens in a dark wood.
Absolutely.
Himself. And so it's kind of a – and also sort of exploring this how do we bring all this together, the dark side with the light. So the play is In the Woods. It's in and talk a little bit about that, because it's in repertory with Midsummer Night's Dream, kind of a fairy tale in its own way.
Yeah, we got very excited about the pairing of these two plays, because, well, obviously they're 450 years apart and they're very different plays in any number of ways. The way The Woods participates in both of those plays, archetypally speaking, is very similar. It's where we get lost in order to find ourselves. You know, the young lovers have to leave all the constrictions of Athens to go out into the woods, which is scary and hard and terrifying and magical, and find their way. And the forest, of course, in Into the Woods is very similar. It's where characters go. They get off the beaten path. They get out of their stability. They go to some terrifying places in order to know themselves better, to mature, as in Little Red Song, loss of innocence, sexual awakening, maturity, loss, all of these things. Both plays explore this meaningfully, I think.
Well, let's get another sample of In the Woods. We're joined now by another actor from the production, Jeff Meanza, who is the baker. That's the creation in this. We know the other characters pretty well from our bedtime stories, but the baker, Jeff, is unique to this play. Welcome to State of Things.
Thanks very much.
Tell us a little bit about this character.
So I think he serves sort of as an everyman within the narrative. He and his wife are desperately seeking a child in the first act, and due to a curse from the witch, we learn very early on, he is sent off into the woods to find those magic objects. And then having the child in the second act, there's still that gnawing anxiety that, you know, this doesn't solve our problems. And so once a giant comes back to the kingdom, the wife of the giant from Jack and the Beanstalk comes back and starts terrorizing people, they're set out into the woods again. And he loses everything, in essence, and then is forced to build a new family with some of the characters that he's been traveling with, and to take responsibility for the choices he's made, and to really, in essence, grow up in a way. I think that ultimately it's a tale about all of these characters coming into their own and becoming adults.
Well, and this, be careful what you wish for, and the collateral damage, unintended consequences of our success, Joe. I think it's one of the more amazing parts about things about this play. You know, the story ends happily for Jack and his mom when the giant is killed and their wealth is restored. Giant's wife, not so happy. Right. So you can't just go kill the giant and not expect something to come back at you.
Right.
And that's an important part of this play. I tell you what, I want you to set up, because I know you're going to do a scene for us, and maybe you can set that up for us.
Yeah. So in late in the play, not to give too much away, but the baker's wife dies, and in this, after a really fierce battle between the surviving characters, trying to place blame for all that has happened, the baker makes the decision that he wants to leave the group and leave his son behind. And then he's confronted with the spirit of his father, who poses the question of where are you going? What are you doing? Why are you making this choice? Don't repeat the pattern I set up, because his father had abandoned him when he was a child. So in this, after having a conversation with his father, he's making the decision to go back and fight the good fight.
No more giants waging war. Can't we just pursue our lives with our children and our wives till that happier day arrives? How do you ignore all the witches, all the curses, all the wolves, all the lies, the false hopes, the goodbyes, the reverses, all the wondering what even worse is still in store? All the children, all the giants, no more.
Actor Jeff Mianza and music director Jay Wright on piano performing the song No More from the musical Into the Woods, now in repertory at Playmakers Theater at UNC Chapel Hill. Artistic director Joe Hodge is here. We think about Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare, and these fairy tales. They do have something in common in that they are timeless. They seem to speak to something essential in the human condition, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, they're dealing with archetypes. They're dealing with age-old, very, 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 very human questions. Both of these plays are.
You talked about setting this in a library, the idea that the story is waiting to be told. The story isn't something that's in us, but out there waiting to be told. I wonder how much of this is sort of the, you know, sort of Freud and his civilization and its discontents. Is it a fundamentally human thing, or is it the human sort of post, the civilized human who has lost something of his connection or her connection and is now trying to find their way back, this journey through the woods?
Yeah, I'm not nearly smart enough to know how to answer that question, though I think it's the right one to ask. I think so much of what the play keeps circling back to, from my perspective, is again how powerful narrative is, how powerful story is. I mean, it's hard to think of any more persistent and perhaps pernicious narrative than this idea of happily ever after. You know, the hero's quest, the journey is about finding the partner, and then they live happily ever after. And of course, anybody in relationship understands, we know categorically that's not true. But is there any more persistent narrative that we hold than this idea of romantic success, that if we just find that ideal person, everything will be okay? And with the play, picking up on Greg's point, you know, it was written in the Reagan era and the cult of the individual. And really with the play, it's not until they make community that they can defeat the giant and move forward with their lives in any meaningful way. So it gets, you know, the play keeps interrogating some of these very important questions in ways I think that are very, very human.
Yeah, reconstituted community, not the one that the fairy tale wrote, not the one that culturally we're asked to accept, and which ends up sadly ever after, but ones that we are resilient enough to make up as we go along in our current context.
Yeah, I think it's beautifully said.
Beautiful play, beautiful set of plays, and I want to thank you so much for being on the program. Joe Hodge is the producing artistic director of Playmakers, the director of Into the Woods. Greg Cable is the show's dramaturg. Actors Jessica Sorgi and Jeff Mianza also joined us, and music director Jay Wright on the piano. Thank all of you for being on the program. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having us, Frank.
Into the Woods, on stage and rotating repertory with A Midsummer Night's Dream, UNC Chapel Hill's Playmakers through Sunday, December 7th. Find out details at our website, stateofthings.org. And we will continue this conversation about fairy tales with a psychiatrist who guides us in the conversation and understanding the story's psychological implications. Stay tuned.